everybody.
Hi, friends. Well, from beautiful Salt Lake City, Utah,
it's Thank God I'm Atheist,
the podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
And I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up on the show today, Dan, we're going to be talking about those oh so powerful Mormon women.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, look out for all the power. Calm down, everybody. The ladies have the authority. They're gonna make shit happen.
Yeah. Well, or so says a top woman at the LDS church. But she doesn't actually mean what you think that might mean.
Are women in the LDS church allowed to top? Anyway, we'll talk about all of that in the latter half of our show.
Oh boy. Yeah, there's no. Anyway.
Innuendo's coming up. They're gonna fly fast and furious.
There's no reverse cowgirl in Mormonism. All right, Dan. First, there's some news, some stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Charlie Kirk, Dan. You know that name. Oh,
the guy whose head is so big and square, it should probably be like a hot air balloon or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. How do we describe Charlie Kirk for those who don't? Aside from insulting the size of his head, how do we describe him for people who don't know? He's a right-wing
Christian nationalist
radio talk show podcaster type activist. Yeah. He gets out into the world and has like rallies and shit, right?
Yeah.
And he says he is horrifying. Like, he says bad things about Martin Luther King at this point, right? Like, he's totally leaning into all, and he didn't used to lean into all the racist stuff. He totally is like totally on board, because that's what people want.
Give them what they want. He knows
at this point. Well,
he knows how to do it
on his show. I think it's called Thought Crime.
His show probably is a thought crime.
They had a segment that they called Recolonize Haiti.
Oh God.
Which
is we are off to a very bad start right now.
I watched the clip. I got the whole 5.5 minutes of this nonsense of this segment of the show.
We do this so you don't have to, friends.
And
that's how this works.
His little friends had some really horrifying things to say, you know, along the lines of, you know, like Haiti would be better off to be colonized. And
we'd be doing them such a favor.
But
imagine the joys.
They all agreed that the United States shouldn't do it, that maybe we should get China to colonize Haiti. Because clearly democracy isn't what these people want, right? Which is also what totally happens when they're colonized.
Right.
And so maybe the strong hand of communism is what they need. Good stuff, high quality commentary.
I feel like what the people of Haiti are in need of and lacking is just an overlord.
Well, anyway, the conversation was just bullshit and nonsense, but it gets to Charlie Kirk sort of toward the end starts to chime in a bit more. Ugh. And the topics had shifted to like just voodoo, right?
Sure. And like,
because I mean, you can't talk about Haiti without talking about voodoo, because
nobody knows more about voodoo, an actual religion that people practice, than a conglomeration of shitty white dudes.
Shitty white millennials. This is what Charlie had to say. I'm just gonna keep reading and stopping at points
letting us all breathe.
There's a lot here. He goes,
okay,
it's important to note that Haiti is legitimately infested with demonic voodoo. I've talked to missionaries that have gone there, and they say they've seen the darkest stuff that a human being can see. In fact, I know people that have come that went to Haiti passively as like agnostic atheists, and they came back searching for Jesus because they saw like legit demonic activity. Yeah, fucking right.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking right.
We all believe you, Charlie.
Yeah.
That is the most believable thing.
Oh, it gets more believable, Dan.
Oh my God.
There was one guy who saw something who literally didn't sleep for like 2 weeks and would just like run around and not sleep for 2 weeks. Like ran the whole island with like supernatural like capacity. there are claims that people have seen like quasi levitation stuff, like almost head spinning type stuff. Oh yeah. You God. Notice he's actually not even saying that people have seen levitation or head spinning.
Right.
They've seen quasi levitation, which I don't even know what. Tippy toes is tippy right? toes quasi levitation.
It's like it's when somebody sort of moves real smooth. You know those dancers that can like.
It's when they move moonwalk.
Yeah, exactly. What is that demon shit?
And I don't know what almost head spinning type stuff is, but
oh my God,
he claims that it happens, and then he goes on, and even what the nonsense that he is trying to sell on his show, he can't even go along with whoever like handed him these notes and said, "Hey, say this." He goes, "There were common stories about people turning into cats at night." And he goes, "Which I don't know. They all knew someone that turned into cats." Again, I'm not so sure about that. I haven't heard that, but the. Like this supernatural energy or just also the stuff where, you know, you look in the Hollywood films where someone like looks possessed, right? Imagine like entire towns that look that way.
Oh my God. Uh-huh. They're just so dumb.
Uh-huh.
He literally said that one of the things that he heard about, he hadn't heard about. Charlie, that's called lying, my friend.
And you just you did it. You did it obviously.
Yeah. You literally said a thing and then said, "Oh, I was lying about that one. But don't worry, I wasn't lying about all of the other ones." Good Lord. The other thing that's baffling to me is that in order to maintain their narrative,
mm-hmm.
think of all the power they're pretending other people have.
It's so dumb. Like, and the thing that I loved, and it's obviously not in this quote right here, but one of the other guys earlier in the segment was talking, he was sort of like denouncing sort of the magical thinking that like that some of the people do, right? That
are wow. kind
of practitioners of voodoo. They're just trapped in this magical thinking or something along those lines. It was very close to that.
Right.
And it's just like,
uh-huh. Meanwhile, Charlie on the other side of the screen is giving him the no, wave off. I'm going to use that later. I'm going to talk about people turning into cats.
Yeah. Which I don't even believe. But, you know, they say it happened, but yeah, I don't think it happened.
I'm going to talk about magic stuff. So we can't pretend like it's magic thinking and, oh yeah, we can. What's amazing is that they totally do that. It's both things. It's just dumb magic thinking and it's real magic that we should all be terrified of. Both things are true in their worldview. That is so dumb. I
fucking love it.
Oh man. Well, I'm going to take us now to a study that was done by researchers, Gina Zerlo and Todd Johnson and Peter Crossing at the Center for the Study of Global Christianity.
Mm.
And what they looked at was, okay, so basically they're talking about graft. They're talking about embezzlement within Christianity of money, because fuck tons of money flow through Christianity every year.
Sure. Okay.
They talk about how in 2024, Christians the world over will give about $1.3 trillion to various Christian causes.
Mm.
Much of that will be tithing, which I don't call giving to a cause. I call that just membership dues, but okay. $1.3 trillion is not anything to sneeze at. That is a large sum of money.
Yeah.
And then they basically,
you can run a lot of countries.
Yeah.
Off of that much money.
Yeah. And then they basically talk about sort of the standard amount of money that is embezzled in any nonprofit organization or in any organization. And, you know, sort of try to come to a figure as to how much is it would is embezzled every year.
What's a reasonable number, or just how much does?
How much they predict would be embezzled. Because okay. Here's the problem. It is insanely difficult to figure out.
Mm.
Like, just imagine, you know, you go to a church and a collection plate is handed down each of the aisles.
Okay.
No one's accounting for that.
Right.
If the pastor at the end of the day does, you know, grabs those collection plates and goes one for me and one for the church and one for me and one for the church or whatever.
Yeah.
No one can call him on it.
Yeah.
And even if he did account for it, he doesn't have to show that accounting to anybody because churches are exempt from having to do keep financial records. So it's basically impossible,
right,
to know. And what's funny about this this study, they, you know, what they do is they basically estimate that like $86 billion of that $1.3 trillion will go to sort of ecclesiastical crime.
Oh, wow. But
I'm saying that is a very low figure.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it is as much as double that because no one can track it.
Right.
And I got news for you people. The ones who are attracted to leading churches, yeah. We're not talking about the moral high ground here. I think anyone who has listened to our show for any amount of time understands that maybe some of them are, but a lot of you know, pastors, priests, that sort of thing, are like diabolical shitbirds.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that number is excessively low. Because, you know, this is comparing it to like other nonprofit orgs. Other nonprofit orgs, there's a lot of problems with that, with them. And, you know, especially the smaller ones, they're not focused on accounting. They're focused on trying to fulfill their mission. And so it becomes this thing where somebody can embezzle, and it's, you know, it's pretty easy to get money out of those, but not like this. Not like this. These people, you know, you're telling me that a Jerry Falwell Jr. isn't like funding trips to see, to get, you know, to watch his wife screw some other guy.
Well, no, don't we have evidence of that one?
Yeah. Probably. I think so. I don't remember exactly. Here's the point. They're doing it. They're all doing it. All of the, it's so easy to skim. No one is allowed to look over their shoulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get these pastors are wealthy anyway, quote unquote, legitimately.
Right.
Uh-huh. And the ones who aren't wealthy are even more likely to be skimming. You know what I mean? Oh, the ones who aren't doing as great. It's supposed to go to the church, but, you know, he's got a car payment. You're telling me he's just not going to go,
If they are also sort of one and the same, right? If the church and the preacher are essentially the same entity,
yeah,
right? Their ministry, right,
is
what you're talking about here. Maybe not the church, but like they can pay themselves whatever they want, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, technically there is supposed to be, you know, a church board with oversight and all of that.
Sure.
Sort of
but
stuff.
If that's your cousin who's also on the dole, right?
Yeah.
Or
he just likes you and knows that you're like, yeah, go ahead.
He'll take you for rides in the jet whenever.
Yeah, whenever exactly.
He wants. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's all.
I think it is a wild underestimation. Hmm. I think that, you know, you take whatever other nonprofits are dealing with and you multiply it by a factor of six or seven. I don't know. It's got to be insane.
Yeah. All right. Well, ugh, that just makes me sick. Yeah, we could never get away with that, Dan.
No.
We could never.
Are you kidding me?
We keep proper books here at TGIA Media.
I know, and I hate it.
To keep us out of trouble.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I want the trouble.
Bring the trouble. All right. Oh God, I'm just avoiding starting this article. That's really what's
get going into on it.
This is a story. Just I don't know if there needs to be a trigger warning here. We're gonna be talking mainly about the political side of this, but it is a story discussing female genital mutilation. Which I don't know. Do we need to tell people? Do we need to define that? I don't know that we need to define that. It,
I think most people understand people, that it is the frequently Muslim practice of, you can look it up.
Removing part of the clitoris.
Yeah.
Labia. Sometimes it involves sealing the vaginal opening.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's unpleasant. It's not, and unacceptable.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard about this, Gambia this week, their National Assembly has voted to advance a bill that would overturn their current ban on, female genital mutilation.
Oh, good. That was in a really slowing them down.
Yeah. Yep. They voted to advance the bill. It still has to go through a process, which will take months, apparently, before the law actually goes into effect. But the United Nations has, according to the United Nations, they would be the first country to undo a ban on FGM. So it will come as no surprise to anybody, I'm sure, that lawmaking body, only 5 of the 58 members of the body are women. Shock. We're all shocked by that.
Pause for gasps.
So this all got started. I guess there was this incident where some women had engaged in FGM. They had performed FGM on a young woman, and they were arrested and fined and blah blah blah. Whatever the appropriate punishment through the law was, they were facing it. Well, one of Gambia's most prominent imams, a man by the name of Abduli Fatty. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. Like, if this was just, I don't fat shame. That's not my thing, right?
No.
And
but that's a funny name.
But Fatty as a last name is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Especially because it's coming from a fucking pig of a human being.
Right.
He paid the fines for the women, saying that the practice was taught by the Prophet Muhammad. And then he launched the campaign to overturn the ban that has led to the current bill. And so he's been a big voice on this. He had such wonderful things to say during the hearings. Let's see. He says that he doesn't have a problem with those who choose not to practice.
Oh, good. FGM, that's nice.
But added that Gambians should have the right to practice what has long been in their culture. Western ideals, he said, should not be imposed in the countries that do not share them.
Yeah, isn't it so horrible when Westerners come in and impose their ideals of not mutilating children?
Yeah,
yeah. By the way, the way that this is usually done, don't get it twisted. It's like without anesthesia on a 14-year-old girl or something like that. Like, it's not okay. It's not an okay thing to do at all.
Some of this is done on babies, also. Because there was a story in this article about there was a woman who didn't even know that her vagina had been sealed. right? Oh. She didn't understand that it wasn't right, right? Yeah. And she didn't understand until like her wedding night, right?
Oh, that's a bad day to find that out. Yeah. That is a...
Yeah. And so Fatty... So this paragraph, let's just get into it. Fatty leaned forward in his chair ahead of the session on Monday, growing animated as he explained that it was about following the teachings of the prophet, about purity, and about, get this, reducing the likelihood of cancer, which of course is absurd.
Right.
And he said, this is, let's see, he says, it is something not to reduce feeling, but to control, to balance the feelings of a woman, he says. When asked to clarify whether he meant women have too much desire in the absence of FGM, he nodded his head and wagged a finger. Too much, Fatty said. Too much. We can say in sex, women's power is more than men's power. Women can do sex longer than men. So that is why Islam came to balance. They can be together and their desire can be balanced.
Okay, so this is about men feeling insignificant or insufficient in the bedroom.
This is Fatty's problem.
Yeah.
Not any woman's problem.
Fatty definitely can't get it up and he hates that. And so he needs to take the ladies down a peg.
Fatty can't get a chubby. Is that what you're saying?
Fatty's a two pump chump, and and like one woman mentioned it to him one time, and since then he's been like, no, we're gonna punish all the women for the rest of the world.
Absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
Which I rarely come to the defense of Islam. But there are many, 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 many places in this world where Islam is in power, right? Runs the country, and they do not do this.
Yeah.
Right.
But that actually makes people, a lot of people say, oh, this isn't a lot of people who defend Islam say this isn't an Islamic practice. Sure. It's a cultural practice.
Right.
But I think this story gives the lie to that.
Right.
It's obviously an imam using the cover of religion,
correct,
to do this practice. I don't think you
this can imam it. Found it in within Islam, within the teachings of the prophet Muhammad.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. I would agree that it doesn't let Islam off the hook. All I'm saying is other Muslims have found a way to practice Islam without resorting to this, right? Yeah. To just barbarism.
What is it with like ancient religion and chopping up people's genitals? It is. What the fuck are you doing?
I don't know. It's but also just the barbarism that is inherent in the Abrahamic religions.
Yes,
right.
It's just that not okay.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
That's the story from West Africa, everybody. I'm sorry to have shared it.
There we go. All right. Well, I'm going to give us some good news about some bad news, which is to say that obviously in these United States, one of the big hot button issues right now is trans people, specifically trans kids. There are a lot of people really working hard to make trans people's lives a lot harder. But in Indiana, there was a victory-ish, not really. Here's the thing. There was a couple. They had a trans kid. They were quite cruel to this trans kid. This young person developed an eating disorder, was just having a miserable time.
God.
And then the state decided to take the kid away. Basically, there were lots of reports of abuse.
God.
The state decided to drop the abuse charges, but kept the kid away because they were experiencing this eating disorder, and it was determined that if they went back to their parents, they would be likely to.
Hmm.
They were in serious like medical danger.
Sure.
So they kept the kids away. The parents sued, and the lawsuit, of course, was just slathered with, we're being discriminated against because of our beliefs, and we, you know, just because we don't believe in transgenderism, the state took away our kid, and obviously none of that is the truth, but that is what they're claiming.
Right.
I think states should take kids away, trans kids away from parents who can't, who are going to who abusively, can't them, yeah. who can't support their, you know, their being themselves.
Right.
It is very, like, there's plenty of documentation that shows how deleterious it is to a young person's psyche when they are not allowed to be themselves by parents. It is abuse. It's just abuse. If a parent can't honor who their child is, that is abuse. That is not okay. But that is not why this teen was kept from their parents. But they took it to court. They went to the Indiana State Court of Appeals, who sided, the state won. And then they went to the Indiana Court of Appeals, and the Indiana Court of Appeals sided with the state. So they took it to the Supreme Court for overview. And the Indiana Supreme Court declined to review the case, which means that the Court of Appeals decision stands, which means that the original thing, at this point it's moot because this was the kid was taken when they were 16 and now they're 18.
Okay.
So none of it matters. The real tragedy of all of this that these parents obviously have no sense of is that they lost their kid long before the state took them away.
Right.
And until they can get right with this thing, they lost their kid.
Right.
They did that. And that is hard and difficult and really, really sad.
Yeah.
But this is going to keep happening. This is going to be an ongoing issue.
Yeah. Good Lord.
We'll see.
All right.
We'll see how that works.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is kind of good news, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
Turns out that this Mike Johnson fellow, Speaker of the House of Representatives, right?
Ugh.
He's a quite religious fellow, right?
I hadn't noticed that hadn't come to my attention.
Well, it turns out that his being such a devout evangelical Christian is kind of getting in the way with fundraising. Apparently a lot of very wealthy GOP donors, a lot of business executives, those types, they've been getting invited to meetings and dinners and blah blah blah. They're just not opening up their pocketbooks way that they used to do.
Yeah.
Especially for Kevin McCarthy, who was super popular with that set.
Right.
Who has been described. I've heard the term juggernaut used to describe the man's fundraising capabilities multiple times. and apparently that was his fucking superpower.
He was
a fundraiser. Well, and you need somebody at the top, right? Of the House of Representatives, your top person in the House, to raise money to help reelect or elect, for that matter, Republicans to Congress. They have their the National Republican Congressional Committee, which in February raised $8.2 million compared to the Democrats raising $14.5 million in the same period of time, leaving the Republicans with a $45.2 million amount in their account. And the Democrats have almost $59.2 million in their bank account.
Well, there you go.
This is actually I think it's good news. I think, you put a lunatic in your leadership position, right? And I mean, he's been playing, he's actually hasn't been, I mean, I don't like the guy, but things seem to be, I don't think he, I don't even want to say anything positive about him.
Yeah. I think you're allowed to not. I think it's fine.
Anyway, and just as a point, just as by comparison, the Senate Republicans are out fundraising, or at least in February out fundraised the Democrats in the Senate. Mm. So there is interest in giving money to the GOP, right?
Yeah.
There just is less interest in giving money to the lunatic part of the party. And this is interesting. It extends to Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump is having a hard time with raising money. Joe Biden is vastly out fundraising him.
Well, I mean, it's weird, right? You would think that people would be lining up to give to a guy who has been sucking them dry for the last 7 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Who claims to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Right. I mean, I've heard that he's actually had to cancel some events because they don't have the money.
Yeah. Right?
And so, good Lord, if it doesn't cheer me up to the point where I'm not nervous.
Right.
But it's a good sign.
I feel like it's true that, like, even in Republican circles, most who pay any attention don't want anything to do with Christian nationalists.
Right.
Like, they know that that's a bad look, and not only a bad look, they know it's bad for them.
Yeah.
They know that it will be bad for the country and bad for them as a party, and so they don't want it.
Right, but they don't speak out against it.
No, because they're terrified.
Hey, which terrifies me, right? Because it's just like, it gives it a chance.
Yeah.
Right? You have all these people who don't want it and acknowledge the risk for the nation, right? That this movement poses, and they're going to be complicit in or potentially could be complicit in them taking power.
Yeah. It's true.
Politics.
Ugh. It's almost like politics is gross. If I didn't know any better, I would think that there was something wrong with politics just as a concept.
Well, I don't know. Like, clearly there are safeguards that we need in our system are just not there. Or the structure of the whole thing, right? Like, you know, there are ways to reform the current system that could help weed out the extremes. Because politics is ultimately how you're going to get things done in a democratic system, in any kind of legislative body. There's give and take. There's horse trading, right? I want to get this done. Okay, I'll help you. I'll vote for that, but I need help with this. And if both of you can agree that the thing that you're trading isn't so morally reprehensible that you just can't bring yourself to it, right?
Right.
Then you just made yourself a deal.
But that's not how it works now. And so,
because we've allowed these extreme, like, because the thing that's so awful has so much influence,
right?
Because it's been allowed to get in there in the first place. We need a system that favors the middle, right? In order to keep the fringes at bay. The fringes can get in. They just can't get this much power.
Yeah. Or all right. Well, I'm going to close this off with a story about something just horrifying. Just horrifying.
Oh.
A group called the Universal Society of Hindus is steaming right now. Their president Rajan Zed has decided to go after a huge societal problem, and thank God he's there. He found out recently that General Mills, the food conglomerate,
the makers of Cheerios,
and various other, especially breakfasty things, they've been using beef gelatin in their Yoplait yogurt. Yoplait is beef. It's made of cows. And he is demanding action. He was appalled.
Is that how the Indian version of Soylent Green would have gone?
Yeah.
Soylent Green is cattle.
Yoplait Green is made of people, cows, I mean. So he's literally like calling for the resignation of the CEO of General Mills and saying that like they have to change their labeling and everything. Look, I am sympathetic if you are a person who doesn't want to eat cows and then, you know, on some moral ground or whatever.
Right.
And then you find out that you've been doing so.
Absolutely.
That would feel bad.
This is actually a huge violation by General Mills. Forgive me, everyone, for making light of, the horror of eating cow.
It's not a huge violation.
It is a huge violation. You cannot misrepresent your product like that.
They're not misrepresenting anything. Here's the thing. The way that the FDA has it set up, you have to put... The ingredient is gelatin, and the FDA does not require you to put the origin of the gelatin. But there's only basically three origins of gelatin.
Yeah.
It's either pigs, cows, or I think fish. But it's an animal byproduct.
Yeah.
And if it is important to you to avoid eating one of those byproducts, do your research about gelatin. Like, you know gelatin. Like, I just have very little sympathy for this. It's on you. The onus is on you.
It's fair. I don't expect there to be. I mean, you're right. If you have a dietary restriction, you need to be reading labels.
Yeah.
But I also am surprised to hear that there's gelatin in yogurt. That surprises me. As a regular consumer of yogurt, as a huge fan, I am a yogurt fan, right?
I'm sure not all yogurts use the cheat of putting gelatin in.
I don't know. I'm a Faye yogurt man myself.
You like the Greek stuff.
I like Faye. Faye is my go-to yogurt. It is yummy, yummy, yummy. The 2% tastes like it's got all the fat in the world in it. And
I don't want to embarrass you. I think it's pronounced phage.
Oh, look who's embarrassed now.
Yeah. Anyway, I think, first of all, I mean, if it's important to this guy, that's fine. Push for different labeling laws not restrictions, but the opposite of that, regulations. So that you have to put, if it's that important to you and you think you can get it to be done, try and lobby the FDA to put the origin of gelatin.
I wonder what the sort of food culture of India is as far as like labeling products that maybe have cow byproducts in them. Right.
But we're not talking about India. We're talking about here.
Oh, I missed that detail. I thought this was product exported for India.
No, we're talking about
here. Did I make a huge, horrible assumption here?
I mean, I don't know. What I said was that it was the Universal Society of Hindus. That could be India. That could be here. But. Oh. I mean, I think that, you know, but I have been talking about what the FDA requires.
I'm so sorry. I would not have had half the reaction that I did if I had understood that this was the United States. Because, read your fucking labels at that point. I was thinking these were like that General Mills had like started shipping this product to India. And I'm like, well, this seems like a problem, right? This is where I was coming yeah, from this whole time. Because it's like, you better be smart about you putting a cattle product, you know?
Yeah. I assume that India has different labeling requirements in terms of this.
Okay. I thought this was literally, that's why I was like, well, shame on them. Yeah. Because I was coming from a different angle.
So normally what this organization is working on is things like making sure that people aren't insensitively throwing Lord Ganesha on a yoga towel, or, you know, they protesting an IPA called Kali the Destroyer. Just sort of taking their religion and making light of it, and, you know, making products about it or whatever. That I can get behind that. That's fine.
Right.
But like,
although it sounds like a perfect opportunity for us.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Why have we not made this yoga mat? You know,
like, right. Free publicity. All we have to do is make sure that these guys are aware of it. But when it comes to yogurt, just look, you don't get to impose your dietary restrictions on the rest of us.
Yeah,
ask for it to be labeled differently, but like, also if it says gelatin, probably back off.
Yeah.
Probably just don't eat that shit.
Oh.
But boy, is he mad for all of the Hindu yogurt eaters in the world.
Well, at least in the United States.
Yeah.
Who've been fooled.
I'm guessing that he's just super mad because it's his favorite yogurt. He's like, he can't go a day without a Yoplait, and now he has to give it up.
They are like candy. Yeah. They're the candy of yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're delicious.
Yep. I think that's funny. Anyway, if you would like to chastise me about being insensitive to the plights of the Hindus and the vegans of the world, please feel free to write into me. It's podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442. Stick around. There's more show coming up.
Well, Frank, we have had some correspondence.
We have indeed, Dan.
I'm going to start us off by, we got voicemails. Let's do some voicemails first.
We did indeed. One that's relevant to what's going on in the world right now, Ramadan, Dan.
Oh,
we talked about it, I believe, last week on the show.
Oh, and we were utterly mystified and baffled about how they determine when it starts and stops.
Because it's like the article was so vague about, well, you know, like if, you know, it might start on this date and it might end on that date. And we were like, what?
Yeah. Give us a date. What? Why don't you know the dates? What's happening?
And so Navy Dave called in to explain.
Okay.
Hey, Frank and Dan, this is Navy Dave in the Middle East. I've been living over here for many years, and I just wanted to comment on the Ramadan portion of your latest episode. Yeah, the way they decide what day Ramadan starts is they have a main imam in each region, and if he sees the crescent, they call Ramadan starting. And on the end day, when they see the right moon again, then they call it stopped. And that's pretty much how they do it over here. For example, this year, the one in Saudi Arabia saw it a day later than everybody else. So they started a day later than everybody else. So their month is going to be all wonky. But, you know, I've been living over here for a long time, and the changes in Saudi Arabia are amazing. And I love you guys, and can't wait for the next episode.
You're telling me that they use the same system as they use for the fucking groundhog?
It's fucking Groundhog Day. That is the, I just imagine an imam poking his head out of a little hole and looking up to the sky. Oh, and then scurrying back into the hole. There has to be a scurry. I'm sorry. It doesn't count if the imam doesn't scurry.
Oh, Good Lord. The Imam saw his shadow.
Yeah. And there's now there's
four more days of Ramadan. Good Lord. It's so dumb. All right.
That is amazing. I do love it. I love it. I think that's great. I think we should now determine more things by like whether a special person happened to like what is your assessment of how crescent the crescent moon is right now? Is it the right crescent yet? No? We'll do it tomorrow then. We'll just do it tomorrow.
Oh, God. All right.
That's amazing.
The next voicemail that we should take a listen to is from Marcia, who, I don't know, has a response not to anything that we've talked about recently on the show, but to something that Andrew Seidel has
friend of the show, Andrew Seidel,
has sort of called for. And so, yeah, let's just have a listen. I thought it was fun.
Hi, this is Marcia from North Carolina. Andrew Seidel said that we atheists need to change the culture. So here's my contribution. I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the United States of America and to the Republic as long as it stands, one nation under the law, indivisible, in pursuing liberty and justice for all. Let's do that at the ballpark. Bye.
Stick that up your baseball. I
think that's great.
I think it's cute.
And it's more appropriate because why are we pledging allegiance to a fucking flag? Yeah. I feel no allegiance toward the flag of the United States. I feel plenty of allegiance to our core values, right?
Yeah, so. I don't. I'm still just creeped out by the whole concept of demanding a pledge of allegiance at all. I think the rest of the world would too. If you're gonna do it,
you're gonna have to replace it. You're not gonna be able to just be like the pledge of allegiance is gone. Oh my God! First of all, just changing it. Can you imagine? Right. Yeah. Like the suggestion of changing the wording of the Pledge of Allegiance, the parts of this country that would immediately erupt into pledging the current allegiance to the flag.
Yeah, just literally you
in the street shouting.
You wouldn't be able to walk down the street, main street of small town USA without someone just yelling it and everybody else stopping in their tracks and putting their hands over their hearts.
And the hateful way in which they were yelling it.
Oh, yeah.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
People just going up to like whatever group they hated at the moment, just gays or Jews or whatever, and just pledging viciously at them.
But I applaud the effort, Marcia.
Yes,
I really do. Indeed. I think it's a good thought. So
yeah, I'm gonna jump in with an email here. This is a message from friend of the show, Devin, who this coming week is going to be giving a talk at the American Atheist Convention, which I will be at.
Nice.
They're in Philadelphia. So if you're there, Devin would like you to maybe stop in. And I think that this is this would be a great session for you to stop in on. Here's how Devin describes it. Devin says, self-managed abortion, safe and supported training. So this is a training to teach people how to self-apply an abortion in states where it is not acceptable.
Okay.
I talked to Devin about this, and they have worked very hard to stay on the windy side of the law here. So you may have to, interpret a few things. But Devin, she says, with more attacks on abortion access and reproductive health, it's time to take back control of our reproductive destinies. Abortion pills are safe and effective, and more people are using them to end their pregnancies. However, accurate information and support are desperately needed. We will be offering a training to teach folks how to effectively and legally spread information about self-managed abortion with pills. Huh. Better yet, Those that complete the session will be able to teach trainings of their own.
Wow.
So I think that's great. I wanted to make sure that this information got out there so that as many people as possible can attend.
Yeah.
There's still time to sign up for this. Well, by the time you hear this, it might be. Anyway, but if you're going, but I did get an email from American Atheists this morning that said there's still time. So you could probably still get in.
Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, go if you're going to the thing and this is of interest to you, make sure you go to that.
All right.
And we've got one more voicemail, do we not?
We do indeed. This is from Chris. We talked a week or two ago about the top court in Quebec maintaining the status quo in Quebec, having to do with religious garb being worn by public employees.
Yes.
Okay. And so Chris, as a Canadian, has some information and his own take on.
Okay, let's hear what this filthy Canuck has to say for himself.
Hey, Frank and Dan. This is Chris from Toronto. I wanted to comment on your segment about Bill 21, the Quebec law that prohibits civil servants from wearing religious items or apparel. An English language school board had sought an exception to the law for teachers and received that exception from a lower court, but this was just recently struck down by the Quebec Appeals Court. However, they kept the lower court's exception for politicians. Go figure. By the way, in Ontario, we have school boards for English language, French language, English Catholic, French Catholic. Our taxes go to pay for the one we prefer. Anyhow, Quebec has gone too far, in my opinion. And I say this as a rabid atheist. Everyone deserves the right to believe whatever silly nonsense they want to believe in. And they can display that on their body. It's the same right that allows me to be an atheist. Does that mean an alt-right weirdo can come to work with a mega hat on? Not at all. But if you've got a version of religion that for the past few centuries says adherents must don some gear to demonstrate devotion, then I think there's a bona fide basis for that. And stopping real faithful from doing that is violating their right to exercise their religion. Now, the government would say that they want a separation of church and state, and that's why they're doing this. But merely wearing religious symbols does not equate to proselytizing. I live in the most diverse city in the world. No one cares if a woman in a headscarf is teaching our children her ABCs, because that's all she's doing. And if she happens to teach them about Ramadan, good. They should know about Ramadan and Diwali and Nowruz and Passover and Easter. It's supposed to be a mosaic up here. At least that's what we strive for. If I'm honest, I'm worried that this law is motivated by hateful xenophobia. Quebec is both heavily Catholic and heavily secular. Christians don't need to wear a cross to be a Christian. Not in the same way as a Sikh wears a turban or certain Muslims wear a hijab or Orthodox Jews wear a yarmulke. For Christians, it's fashion, like that torturous horizontal cross necklace. So here we have a law that substantively affects non-Christians in a serious way. Again, go figure. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah. I agree with most of that. I think you're right that it definitely probably overburdens non-Christians more than it does Christians.
Yeah, totally.
Which is why it sailed through so easily. Which is why they were able to do it.
Indeed.
I tend to think that. Yeah, if as long as it's not the problem comes, not from proselytizing, but it comes from when. Someone in a small town isn't part of the majority group. And then, they go into a place and they get the sense that they are not going to be served correctly or honestly. But that's going to happen whether that person's wearing the cross or not. That's a problem that needs to be addressed on a much more fundamental level than just what that person's allowed to wear. And I don't think you've solved anything by not allowing, small or even, if it's a Sikh or if it's an ultra Orthodox Jew or whatever. Yeah,
right.
They wear those things. That's what they wear.
Right.
Let them wear what they wear.
Yeah.
It's just fucking clothes, man.
Yeah. Alrighty.
All right. Well, do we have anybody to thank?
We do indeed, Dan. We have two new patrons on Patreon this week.
Lovely.
We have William, who's a new deacon. So thank you very much. And Liam, who is a new teacher. So thank you very much.
Awesome.
To Liam. If you'd like to join them, you can. It's very easy to support the show. You just have to go to thinkgodimatheist.com and click on the support tab, and there's options and whatnot there. As always, we have our top donor to thank, our Lord and Savior, Davis!
More show coming up. Oh, Franklin, listen.
Yeah.
Do you remember, have you heard of this little group they've got now called the Marmons? it's an adorable little.
Yeah, they asked me to meet them a few years ago, and I did. I met the Marmons.
Oh,
I didn't like what I saw.
No, I turned away. okay, so we're talking about the Mormon Church, and there was a talk given this last week by one Sister J. Annette Dennis, which I love that she gets an initial. Think of how important a woman must be to all of the important men in the Mormon Church. They have an initial.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very rare that you hear of a woman with an initial.
Especially
anyway,
first initial. The first,
right?
Like, how horrible is that J name that she
decided to go with Annette?
I mean, Annette's a fine name, but just had to, like, not do that awful J name.
Yeah. What are you hiding?
Jezebel Annette, whatever.
Sister Dennis, what are you hiding? All right. Here's the thing. She is in the presidency of what is called the Relief Society.
Mm.
And that is the organization within the Mormon Church that does that's for ladies. That's for women people.
Lady Mormons go to Relief Society.
Yeah. While the gentlemen go away and talk about important things in their priesthood meeting, the women go and talk about whatever their important things are in Relief Society. And that's just sort of how Mormonism is structured. And the thing about it is that they have no power, like literally none.
Right.
When the presidency of the Relief Society is allowed to speak at their general conference, and we're talking, you know, the presidency over the entire church,
mm-hmm.
it is big news because
President over the ladies of the church.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are definitely not considered presidents over the men.
Not even in the slightest. Like, well, I mean, you'll recall, Dan, I think it was just within the last 6 months, the whole hubbub out in California where the church leaders there had been allowing the Relief Society presidency of that ward, right, to sit up on the dais with the men, right?
Shocking.
No official, nothing official, just they sat up there as sort of a symbol. These are the top women in the ward, right? These are the leaders of the ladies of the ward. And the church here, the head of the church here, they decided that that just was too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
A bridge too far.
Ladies cannot be on the dais with the men. Unless they're speaking later in the meeting. Yeah. Not as a symbol. They cannot be up there as a symbol.
Right. They have gone to insane lengths to ensure that men have the power and women have
their place.
Their place. Women have their place. And women get the power that women have is lip service. The church grants lots of lip service to the power. Anyway, the quote that we got from the talk given by Sister Dennis was, quote, There is no other religious organization in the world that I know of that has so broadly given power and authority to women.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Which every honest Mormon and every ex-Mormon in the world saw and went, the fuck are you talking about?
How deluded could you possibly be?
I realized at one point that maybe what's happening here is just the phrase that I know of is doing all of the heavy lifting. And she just refuses to learn anything about any other religious organization.
Which is probably pretty fair. Like when somebody came along and was like, tap, 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 Sister Dennis, the Anglicans actually ordain female bishops.
She just put her fingers in her ears. La, 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 la. Oh, don't tell me about...
And somebody else came along and was like, Sister Dennis, like the community of Christ, you know, the kind of the other big Mormon group.
Offshoot. Yeah.
Their president of their church is a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
la, 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 like, la.
I think you don't know of these other organizations, God. Do you?
It is a level of delusion and maybe like purposeful self-delusion.
Right.
It's laughable even to people within the church.
So here's the deal. I don't think that she doesn't know those things. I mean, it's possible that there's a lot that she doesn't know, but I think she knows that like other churches have like women leadership and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I think what she's, and this is a little bit of a, we got to get into some Mormon doctrine here, right? And some weird sort of Mormon, it's not really, some of this isn't really doctrine, right? But whatever.
No, it is. And so we're going to go into some Mormon belief deep cuts here.
Okay. So really briefly, Mormon men of a certain age, i.e. like 11 or 12, right? Get like this little sample priesthood. And this is what we're giving out to like the supporters of the show. Yeah. You're a deacon, right? And you have just this little tiny bit of responsibility and thing that you can do, right?
Yeah.
And then you, 2 years later, you get made a teacher, 2 years later, blah, blah, blah. And then you, when you become an adult, you become an elder, right, in the church.
Yeah.
And
when you're an elder at 19, yeah, that shit.
Totally ridiculous. And, you know, and so you get the Melchizedek priesthood. And this is like the authority of God, right? You were holding like God's authority on earth. And... Mm-hmm. And so like they love this shit, right? This is their thing. This is the big Mormon thing. Priesthood holders, right? They don't even call them men half the time. They call them the priesthood holders, right? Yeah. And so there's this whole thing that Mormon women of a certain kind of Mormon woman, right? That they like to tell themselves this thing that like they have access to the priesthood through their husband. Right.
Right.
And so in her mind, because the priesthood is the end all be all God's authority on earth, her little tiny bit of access, like this is actually her really shitting on all the other churches. Her tiny little bit of access to the priesthood through her husband is more authority than the Pope or that president of that church over there who's a woman. Right.
Yeah.
Like she has more authority by having no authority than those people over there.
That's amazing.
I think that's more the line of thinking.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's literally, I saw a tweet that said, okay, you think that women in your church, in the church, have more authority than in any other church. If the men all leave the room, does that still stand? Because the answer's no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's such a shit thought process that they have about this as well. Because what about single women in the church, right?
Right.
What about women whose husbands don't have the priesthood or not worthy priesthood holders or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's like,
don't worry, they can just go to their 12-year-old son.
if they have one? What if they right. only have daughters? Like it's so yeah. like she on her own has no access, right?
No.
She is on her own without a man. I'm yeah. sorry, that's not some great position to be in. God has not really been looking out for you that much, Sister Dennis.
As Uncle Mark was fond of saying, 12-year-olds outrank their mothers in the yeah. Mormon church.
Yeah.
12-year-old boys outrank their mothers.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting thing about Mormon history. It wasn't always so.
Mm.
In the very early parts of Mormon history, Relief Society members had some like priesthood authority and could exercise priesthood if they needed to. It was supposed to be the men,
mm-hmm.
but if like there was only a woman in the house
mm-hmm.
and you know someone was sick or injured or whatever, a woman could give a priesthood hmm. blessing.
Hmm.
And there are accounts of this happening.
Hmm.
But not anymore, baby.
Nope. In one little moment in the temple,
yeah,
where there can't be any men there because the
ladies are basically naked,
right? And so in that one spot, a woman can officiate in sort of a priesthood sort of way.
And oh, did that sound a little creepy that I just said that there's a moment in the temple ceremony where the women are basically naked?
Well, there's also, to be fair, there's also a moment when the men are almost naked too.
Yeah. If that does that sound creepy to you? Because it should.
Yeah,
that's pretty creepy.
But I mean, the men are in their room and the women are in their room, and
mm-hmm.
but mm-hmm. you have to. How else are you supposed to anoint with oil?
Anoint with the loins.
Holy oil.
Yeah, they do a washing and anointing.
Blah. I was so fucking freaked out. I was like, what in the fuck is going on?
Oh, because they don't warn most people.
Yeah.
You probably got no warning that this was happening.
Zippo warning. And nobody even thought, like, once we're within the temple, just to be like, just so you know, there's yeah. going to be some freaky shit coming,
it's gonna, coming a dude, down the pike. An old dude's about to touch you in places that you don't know that
Brother that Boyd,
yeah,
who you know from the ward, is going to be touching you.
On your inner thigh with some oil.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. You'll like it. Don't worry about it. Don't get a boner, though.
So fucking nuts.
Oh, Lord. It is like the way that, and I think we can export this from Mormonism to sort of all religion. It's such a human trait to delude oneself. But especially when you have, you know, I think it was Voltaire that said, when you can convince someone to believe absurdities, you can make them commit atrocities or something. But more importantly, when you can convince someone to believe one set of absurdities, what's another set of absurdities on top of that?
Oh, like, yeah.
Sure. Let's just believe that we are the most feminist religious organization on the world. The women have power in this organization.
Right. It's just, it's.
Here's what's amazing. I would bet dollars to donuts that a man told her to say this. If you know the Mormon church, you know I'm probably right.
Or it's something she heard her husband say once.
Yeah. Or that I think, because look, when these women speak in public, it is largely scripted for them. They have to run everything by the brethren. Like,
really?
everything that comes out of their mouths in a talk is because the same is true for the brethren. Like, they have to run everything by each other.
Mm.
I'm sure the prophet could say something off the cuff, and they all say things off the cuff, but they're supposed to clear it with the brethren. I'm certain they said, hey, say something about how women have power in the church. And she was like, okay, I'll go all the way. All right. Well, there you go. If you think you have power in your church and you want to tell us about it, or if you want to tell us about how you had no power in your church, feel free to do so. You can write into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to play it on the show. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist, and click the like button.
And if you'd like to join one of our members-only clubs, you can do so. Go to our website, thankgodimatheist.com/members-only.
Thanks so much to the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their fine music.
And thanks to Gordon Johnston for the use of his music.
And thanks to all y'all for tuning in. We sure do appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.